Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Welcome back. You know, Tara, January is National Human Trafficking Month. And so here at the North American Mission Board, we're always about raising awareness and helping the church engage these issues, and especially this deep evil practice of human trafficking. Mm-hmm. So a branch of the North American Mission Board is Send Relief.
That's right.
Yep. And that's the Evangelistic Compassion Ministry branch of the North American Mission Board. And so there's a great video posted on Send Relief about human trafficking. But with the Super Bowl quickly approaching and being in our own city this year, we just want to stop and spotlight and further explain the evil of human trafficking and, this blows my mind, the billion-dollar industry that it's become.
Mm-hmm. And we really want our listeners to understand why foster youth and children are so vulnerable to falling prey to human trafficking. But before we really dig into that, we really want people to understand what human trafficking is, because awareness leads to action.
That's right. And so I can't think of anyone better to explain this or to help educate us on human trafficking than Ashley Chapman. Ashley, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's a joy. Thank you for having me.
And so I think a lot of our people, I know you do a lot, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. You're involved in helping equip ministries to engage human trafficking. But I just want to use your knowledge and your experiences to help our listeners understand, what is human trafficking?
Right. Sure. So human trafficking, it is, for purposes of just general understanding, you can think of it as modern-day slavery for purposes of sexual exploitation, labor or services, forced labor and services, or even organ trafficking. It's a global evil trade that is affecting over 40 million souls around the planet, around the world, as well as here in the United States. And it rakes in about $150 billion per
Good
year.
Good grief.
Every year.
That's just hard to wrap my head around that number. It really is.
It is. And $150 billion is, it is hard to wrap your mind around how much traffickers are making off the sale of human beings. And we're talking about the sale of men, women, and children. But $150 billion, to put it in perspective, if we can, is more than Fortune 500's top five companies.
Wow.
So that's more than Apple, JP Morgan, Berkshire Hathaway, Wells Fargo, and Alphabet, which owns Google. Traffickers are making more than all five of those companies combined.
Wow.
And that is an annual figure.
Yeah, it's the fastest growing crime in the world. Is that correct?
That's right. It is just trailing behind the sale of illegal arms in the world and drug trafficking as well. Although both groups, organized crime as well as low-level gangs, are moving to the sale of individuals and human beings, because I can sell a weapon once or a drug once, but I can sell a child 20 times a night and make much more money and be much less likely to get caught.
Wow. I just cannot imagine you do this full time in this ministry, your heart for these victims. How did the Lord actually lead you into helping the vulnerable? This had to have started in your heart a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. It did. So my father, when I was born, was the pastor of the homeless mission downtown Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, wow. That's neat. Yeah.
Yeah, and I met the Lord personally when I was 7 years old. But when I was 11 years old, I had tagged along with my parents on a youth trip. So I felt like the big kid, and I was sitting in, listening to the evening services. And one night, the Lord just really pricked my heart and just really convicted me about the fact that I was waking up every day, and I wasn't asking Him what to do with it. And that He had something He wanted me to pay attention to in my life. And so I committed to the Lord that night to ask Him every day what it was He wanted me to pay attention to. And 2 weeks later, a woman fled to our house with her three children and asked my parents for refuge, because she explained that her boyfriend was abusing her and the three little kiddos. And would we give them shelter? And the first night, we realized the mother also was an abuser. And so we had her leave, and we kept three little souls in our house for the next 6 months. We had a an 8-year-old who was deaf in one ear by being hit repeatedly with a couch leg a few weeks before. We had a 5-year-old who is mute from trauma, not because he couldn't speak, but he wouldn't. And then we had a 2-year-old little girl who had already experienced sexual assault. And so my eyes were opened dramatically to several things. One was just the brokenness, the horror that exists in our world for little souls, vulnerable children. Also to the brokenness of our systems mm-hmm. and our communities that had allowed this kind of terrible abuse to happen, and how difficult it was to protect these kids through our foster care system and our social services and judicial systems and keep them from entering back into harm's way. And then I had also committed to the Lord to read the Bible through in 6 months. So as the children were in our home those 6 months, I was also reading page after page after page of God's heart for the oppressed and the vulnerable. And at the end of that, the Lord miraculously freed those children from those parents, and they were all adopted in one home from a family in our church. And I just committed my life to the Lord at that moment to pursue this cause all my days. So it's been a lifelong commitment.
And so now you're president and CEO of the Alliance for Freedom, Restoration, and Justice.
That's right.
And that exists to end human trafficking?
That's right. We explain it this way. We want to end human trafficking and protect the vulnerable, because human trafficking, any strategy to combat that, you've got to realize trafficking is the darkest consequence on the planet of leaving people in vulnerable places, whether they're children or adults. So you're never going to end human trafficking unless you're looking upstream at the way that it's connected to vulnerable populations. So we attack both.
And I think that's why this just really tugs at my heart, because of my Tara and I's just love for foster children mm-hmm. and wanting all children to know that they are loved and they are wanted and that God has a plan for their life. And human trafficking is the complete opposite of that.
Right.
It is. It's the gravest of betrayals, exploitation. It's just the darkest of all evils, right? Where we take a look at a human being and we commoditize, we objectify that human being, and then we sell that human being for our own profit until their little bodies give out. And so it is just the darkest evil. That's right. Which is why it excites me to talk to the church.
Right.
Because the church follows God Almighty, the Lord Jesus Christ, who is light. And what I try to get across to the church every time I have an opportunity is to explain that light wins against darkness, not part of the time, not a larger percentage of the time, but every single time.
That's right.
So we have to just bring that light to every dark crevice where this exists, and it will cease to be.
That's right. And with, 2.3 billion Christians in the world,
that's right.
We have an army.
Mm-hmm. We have an army. That's right. And, when you look at numbers like 40 million souls enslaved, that can feel overwhelming till you match it against a figure like that, right?
Right.
2.3 billion Christians in the world. But now we're talking about a much better ratio of being able to eradicate this very great evil. And it only exists because we allow it to, because either through our ignorance or our inaction, right? Traffickers are able to fill in gaps and prey on these vulnerabilities that wouldn't exist if we were there.
We had a guest on not very long ago who said, it's not that the church doesn't care, it's just that they don't know. And they don't even know where to begin oftentimes to say, how can I engage in this area of human trafficking? What can I do as an individual?
That's right. I'm absolutely 100% convinced that when we're faced with this very real, growing, dark issue, people react to it one of two ways. They either close their eyes and shut their ears, because I'm convinced it's not because they don't care. It's because they don't know how to make a difference.
Right.
And it's just too dark of a thing mm-hmm. to know about without feeling like I can engage it. So that happens. And then another reaction is to just dive in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, I'm just going to do whatever I can, right? Like I'll run out there right now. And both reactions are understandable, but neither of them are going to lead to something that's going
to
end this. So we work with churches, and we have tons of resources for this. We have a church toolkit, our church teaching series, tons of assets on our website to help churches or individuals leading ministries in churches to understand there's a strategy to this. There's a space. We call it the space between framework, right? So I have to take a literal moment to understand what's the strategy. That's the S. What are all the possibilities, right? That's the P. What are amazing things that churches are doing already that I could learn from, accelerate my learning curve? So what's the strategy? What are the possibilities? And what's my local context, right? So what's going on in my own city? Who are the souls who are being trafficked in my city? And when I travel the country and the world about 40 weeks every year.
Wow.
On average for the last 5 years. And I can tell you every single city I go to is facing human trafficking, but it can appear very differently in one city here. And then 100 miles away, it appears very differently in a different city. And I was in a Midwest state working with their Administration of Children and Families and working with their Attorney General's office. And you would think a person who's new to human trafficking would think human trafficking looks very much the same in a Midwest state, and it does not. In one city, we were working with foreign national children who had been placed there, who were flooding across our borders, placed in families, and were ending up in labor trafficking and sex trafficking in that city. Quite a different problem to solve for. Then in another city, which was sort of a hub city in this state, where it was driven by runaway and homeless youth. So you've got to understand how is trafficking happening in your local community as a church and attack that. Because otherwise we build solutions that don't meet the problem.
So does human trafficking, I know this is a myth, so I'm just going to let you speak to it. I think many times people think that human trafficking only occurs in cities. So would you say that that's a myth?
It's
in
a myth.
In like big cities?
I would say it is not the whole truth. I would say it that way, right? So the truth is it happening in cities? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Is it happening in rural communities? Unfortunately, yes. And I was just recently with a church in a local community of 50 people, and they had two trafficking situations in their community. And one was driven by a family that was selling their child because they were addicted to opioids, and that is human trafficking. And then another was a youth who had made a friend on Facebook and had gone to meet that friend, and that friend turned out to be a man in his 30s who whisked her and several other girls away to the larger city to traffic them at night.
Good grief.
It is affecting large urban areas. It is affecting rural areas. Other myths are it's over there, not here, mm-hmm. right? And the truth is it's over there, you bet. And I've been over there in cities that make almost all of their income off the sale of little children. It's just despicable. But then it's here too. It's here in the United States, and it's in every city I've ever stepped into. We just might not see it yet.
And, you know, you got to, you know, we just want our listeners to understand these are young people who are young adults and men and women and children who are beaten and starved, and they look the same as our daughters and sons.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, we have, you know, because of media, right, and movies and some stories that get news attention that are perhaps the most extreme, we have in our heads a picture sometimes of what human trafficking is. And we don't, then it keeps us from seeing it right next door, right? So a couple of stories on that point that might help drive that point home are, and this happened in Atlanta. So a woman, and I wouldn't normally say her name, but she is out telling her story. So Rachel is her name. And she was a incoming freshman in Atlanta from a very great family out in California. And she came to Atlanta on scholarship to a local university at Emory in Atlanta. And a man came up to her and said, "Wow, you're just so beautiful. And, I have a modeling company, and I have, you can come and be in music videos and just make a ton of cash." And what young incoming freshman girl doesn't
right.
want to hear that? And so she, and he did have some front companies, some legitimate opportunities for her at first. And then this is how, you know, the organized criminal syndicates work. And then she shows up one night and he says, "You're this man's escort tonight."
Oh, gosh.
And she said, "No, I'm not." And they went back and forth for a bit but he had already garnered her mother's home address under the guise of needing that if ever he needed to send her check that way and all kinds of personal information. And he promised that he would shoot the next person who opened the door of her mother's home. And she believed that because he made her believe it through his own violence towards her. And that entered her into a world of going to college during the day and being trafficked all the night long.
Oh.
And when the FBI finally broke the sting, this man had done this to over 100 incoming freshmen in surrounding universities. So, yes, so somehow we've got a picture in our head that doesn't let us see it right here in front of our face. And sometimes we think, you know, there aren't things that we could do to combat it or prevent it from happening in the first place. This is something else the church is keenly able to do, right? I mean, how do we run to help victims who are being victimized, but how do we prevent it from ever happening?
Exactly.
And I think one other story I'll share that I think drives that point home is, so we did a docufilm on human child sex trafficking here in America a few years ago. And one of the stories that came to light was a survivor was asked, is there a point in your life where this would not have been your trajectory, right? What, can you pinpoint a time in your life when this would not be your story? You would not have gone into trafficking as a child and finally been rescued as an adult. And she said, yes, I can. I know exactly when it happened. And she said she was 11 years old and her father left their family and their car broke down. And her mother had to get a second job because she couldn't afford to get the car fixed and she couldn't afford daycare either. So she had to leave her 11-year-old daughter at home alone at night. And that's when the trafficker found her. And it just chills me every single time I share that story because I think how fixable was that moment.
Mm-hmm.
If the church had been paying attention, if we'd been proactively reaching out to single moms or maybe fixing that car or caring for that child. And this is the point, if I get no other thing across the church, we have got to quit being reactive in our ministries and reactive in the way that we're handling human trafficking. We have to create a proactive plan of action for our city so that the enemy has nothing to exploit in that city. No vulnerable soul without a friend, no dark places without light running straight to it. And if we don't do that, and we haven't been doing it, that's why trafficking has grown to such massive proportions.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, to me, that one of the hardest parts of human trafficking is it's a crime that's just hidden in plain sight.
Right.
Like you can walk right beside it or go through the Atlanta airport and it's...
Or sit in class next to
the girl
that is being trafficked. Right.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And, you know, and obviously this is my full-time job. And so, and I train communities all across the planet on this, but until we know how to see it, we don't. You know, it is so often hidden in plain sight. Certainly, there are cases of human trafficking victims who are definitely not in plain sight, you know, and children who are being used for child pornography and women and men in cages. I mean, that is a reality. But here in the United States, overwhelmingly, these youth and these children are in plain sight and we're missing it. And so I was just on vacation. And I won't name the city because it's under investigation now, but my husband and I and four generations of my family have gone on this particular spot on vacation every year. And I showed up this past year and there was a whole trafficking ring of foreign national young girls happening in the city. And no one in the city was seeing it because they didn't know what to look for. But it was so obvious to me having, you know, trained so many cities on this. And we finally got both the FBI and DHS involved in ending it. So yes, we've got to learn how to see it and then be brave enough to engage it, to take that next step and engage it.
So what kinds of things do we look for?
That's a question on everybody's heart and mind. It's difficult to answer because it depends on what type of trafficking is presented. So for a youth, what you're looking for are clusters of changes. I'll put it that way. So some of my friends in law enforcement share with me about how they become human lie detectors, right? And a lot of it is around all of a sudden several things happening, right? That shift this person's life. And so that's what you're looking for, is a cluster of things. And that can include, especially for a youth who's got fractured safety nets, and we'll talk about that during our time when we talk about the nexus of human trafficking and foster care. But a child who's isolated, a child who all of a sudden is removing herself or himself from their friends, their family, someone who's met someone online, someone who's all of a sudden talking about older friends and older boyfriend, someone who's all of a sudden receiving nicer things mm-hmm. when there's no explanation for that, right? So because a lot of what traffickers do, especially with youth here in the United States, is they present themselves as a boyfriend at first. This is called grooming. And so all of a sudden they're being just lavished with all these expensive gifts and the child starts to really build trust. And we start to see that happening with no explanation. Certainly when we're seeing someone with bruises, someone with malnourishment, someone who is becoming truant, in their high schools. You know, truancy officers in high schools keenly able to identify trafficking situations, but they're only seeing a child who's not showing up for school instead of all of a sudden seeing this is an unusual moment. There's a pattern growing here, and what's causing that pattern, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different ways that you can identify human trafficking depending on what you're looking for. If you have foreign labor, foreign nationals in your city, and let's say you go to your nail salon and a lot of young, beautiful girls are in that nail salon, and you notice that they're always there. And when you drive by that nail salon at night, you notice, well, that's odd. They're open at 11 p.m. Why is that? And, you know, so depending on what kind of trafficking is present, we'll show you what different indicators are. And we have lots of information on our website about this. So I would just encourage you, yeah, to just go and read. We have a human trafficking awareness course we just launched today in honor of National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And so if you go and take that course, we'll walk you through all the different indicators depending on what kind of trafficking is present.
You have been listening to the Adopting and Fostering Home, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast and other relevant resources, visit sendrelief.org.